welcome to Chit Chat Money. On this show, hosts Ryan Henderson and Brett Schaefer interview industry experts and riff on the world of investing. As a quick reminder, Chit Chat Money is a CCM Media Group podcast. Ryan and Brett are also general partners at Arch Capital, and Arch Capital may have positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. Anything discussed on Chit Chat Money by Ryan or Brett or any other podcast guests is not formal advice or recommendation. Now please enjoy this episode.
Welcome in. This is the Thursday deep dive episode. We have Ian Gray on the show and we're talking Poshmark. I want to confirm, we got told, I think some people may have been laughing at us. We called it Poshmark. And if you're laughing at us again for thinking it would be called that, because isn't that a term, posh, right? Isn't that a fashion term? It shows how...
I have no idea, but...
It shows how... Well, it shows how cool we are. Either way, Ian, how are we doing today?
Doing well, you know, trying to live a more posh life. So, you know, always striving for the top.
There we go. So we're going to be talking, that was a great dad joke there. We're going to be talking Poshmark today. But first, Ryan, why don't you talk about our friends at Seven Investing?
Yeah, so we're getting close to the new RECs, if I'm not mistaken. And if you were paying any attention to the markets today, there's been some big sell-offs. So I've got a feeling this next batch of recommendations might be some enticing ones. And yeah, you can use our code CCM for $10 off. So it's only $7 for your first month and you can access all their old RECs as well. I don't know. There's no reason not to do it.
No, I mean, it's a great addition to your research process. I love seeing it each month. I usually write down three or four where I'm like, all right, I'm going to do a deeper dive on this and research them. It's fantastic and it's at a reasonable price. So
do you want
nothing else to say?
A Starbucks coffee or do you want life-changing returns?
Life-changing returns. Well, thank you, Sue Zorman.
You.
Yeah.
But use code CCM. I think we can get to the show now.
Yeah, go ahead and introduce Poshmark.
Yeah, Poshmark is a consumer-to-consumer, fashion-focused social marketplace. So it's primarily used for reselling clothing. And so people sign up and you give them a bit of data. So stuff like clothing size, brands you like, area code, just because you can get some closer to you. And then based on that info, they recommend basically clothes that you might like. I mean, it's almost like eBay with a better recommendation algorithm. And
it seems like they focus on the recommendation algorithm for each individual user, right?
They do. And it's like, it's the social part is that it's other people selling this stuff to you. So today I went on, signed up, made an account to kind of check it out. And I could look up Lululemon shirts and there's people reselling them for cheaper than you get them at the Lululemon store for. So it's like, if you like it, why not buy it through there? If you're comfortable buying resale or resold clothing. But it's two-sided, obviously. So buyers can also be sellers. You can go on there with more of a focus for selling, but you can do both. That's where I say it's a little bit like eBay. And then Poshmark takes a 20% fee on the final price if the item is over $15. And if it's less than $15, it's a flat fee of $2.95. And so when you think about it in comparison to some of its possible competitors, the benefits are that it really provides more. When we say social commerce, it's more focused on the commerce, less on the social. Now it's trying to make some sort of inroads towards that social component, but it's really just an end-to-end solution for reselling your clothing.
Yeah, and they try to make that pitch that social aspect is going to make them differentiated, you know, make them better than their competitors, but we'll kind of see and maybe we'll talk about that. Ian, do you have anything?
Yeah, I'll just add one thing. And you sort of mentioned it, Ryan, but they have this functionality because I signed up for an account as well to kind of see how it worked. And this, what they call the feed, right? Where you see the people that you're following or things that you might be interested in. And that did feel, at least to me, like a social media feed that you're really scrolling through and seeing some of those types of things. So, you know, to their credit, there's, it's a little different, but definitely probably more focused on the commerce.
Yes. It seems like the features, a lot of them have been copied, you know, from Instagram and Pinterest. Is that fair to say?
The social features? Yeah, I'd say they would. I think what like Facebook Marketplace and Pinterest maybe lack is like all the logistics side for the sellers.
Right.
it's less that that stuff's more focused on social and less on giving the like all the fulfillment or all the back end stuff of the actual commerce. Okay.
Yeah, and I'd just say I think there's also more functionality in terms of like searching for consumers. Like on Facebook Marketplace, you can kind of search for like Nike clothing, but it won't necessarily be curated in a very intuitive manner. Whereas like the search functionality on Poshmark seem to be much, you know, you could click on the category, right? I want to see Nike shirts or I want to see Under Armour shoes or whatever it is. So it kind of, it seems to have a little better a little better display, a little better user interface for users who are trying to, you know, search for a specific type of clothing.
And so, right. And the use case
less like I was just going to say a little bit less like Craigslist, right? A little more like Poshmark versus Craigslist.
Yeah, the use cases are all different too. So I mean, some people maybe treat it more like a social feed where you're following Serena Williams' closet or whatever. I know that she's like a partner.
Yeah, she's on the board.
Some people maybe use it like that, like, oh, I want to get that type of clothing. Or some people might use it where I'm looking for Nike shirts that are being resold and they care less about the social feature. So it really just depends on each user. But I'll get into the history. They were founded in 2011 by a group of people. Bear with me. I suck with names. Everyone knows that. Chetan Pungalia, Gautam Golwala, Manish Chandra, and Tracy Sun. How'd I do?
The C plus, I don't know. South Asia is kind of, you know, it's a tough test for you, but.
All right. Well, the first three initially worked at Kaboodle, and Kaboodle was a company that Manish Chandra created prior to founding Poshmark. And then Tracy Sun was actually a fashion industry executive, but they all sort of came together to build Poshmark. And Posh, I guess, Posh is sort of a fashion term, and Mark stands for marketplace.
I'm not an expert on that, so do not take my word for that, but I've heard the term before.
Anyway, Chandra sold Kaboodle for $30 million prior to founding Poshmark, and so raising funds was pretty easy for them. They used a lot of the same venture capitalists when they started Poshmark. They started just mobile only, but they slowly evolved into other areas. So I think it was just iOS, and then they pivoted to Android also, and now they're obviously on desktop. And at one point, they actually had sort of a debacle with the U.S. Postal Service that almost led to Chandra going to jail, apparently. That might be an over-exaggeration, but it eventually turned into a partnership that Poshmark now calls Posh Post. Poshmark Posh Post is where the buyers pay a flat fee to ship any item with the U.S. Postal Service up to 5 pounds, which is 99% of the sales, and sellers get a prepaid, pre-populated shipping label when an item is sold. And so they kind of have this good partnership going with the Postal Service. And then I guess other notable items, they had a data leak in 2019, but it ended up being pretty inconsequential. It sounds like nothing was really, no passwords were hacked, no financial information or addresses. And then they ended up going public in January of 2021. So they've almost one quarter now.
Yeah, three months. They did their full year results. We don't have Q1 results yet. They're one of those late.
But they have filed a 10K.
They have filed a 10K, so we got to see that and the S1 as well. Yeah, I'll hit the industry and landscape competition here. Pretty simple. Social commerce, which is defined as the, you know, it's easy. It's in the name. It's e-commerce and social combined into one. We talked about that with Pinterest last week. That industry is supposed to grow to a $600 billion industry within 7 years. As the one that's tasked with researching these industry things each time, I've come to realize that these numbers a lot of the time are wild guesses. So don't get bogged down on that $600 billion number. Just know that it is one, a massive industry, and it's going to be a massive industry, and it is growing like gangbusters. So giant tailwind behind them, but they have a large list of competitors on their 10K. They list, but there's other ones as well. Amazon, eBay, Etsy, Facebook, Mercari. Mercari is a very close competitor. And then there's also Shopify, TJ Maxx, and Walmart. TJ Maxx and Walmart, probably not. But since this is kind of similar to Pinterest, I'll ask again, who do you guys think Poshmark's true competitors are? Ian, we'll start with you.
I think, I don't know. It's a tough one. I think eBay is probably a close one. And I also think that actually this is one of those businesses where a big competitor is the existing kind of more brick and mortar type stores and places, you know, there's like some of this, it's not, this isn't focused on thrifting. It doesn't seem like to me, it's more focused on like some of these brands like Nike or Lululemon. But I know that people do like with clothing sometimes to go out and kind of touch and feel it and find a good deal at, you know, a local place or something like that. So I don't know. This is a tough one to find a true competitor for.
Okay. Ryan, what do you thought? What do you think?
As far as like resale for clothing, I think, yes, there are alternatives to what Poshmark offers. But I think Etsy, eBay, and then ThredUp is another one.
Yeah.
They're a platform that's very similar, actually went public recently. But I think it's like a quarter of the size or maybe less.
Do you think Pinterest will be one soon?
They could possibly overlap in the future. They may even overlap a little bit now, but I just don't think they're, it feels very different.
Okay, so different value proposition.
Yeah, from the customer's point of view, like if I'm going onto Pinterest, I'm kind of going there for inspiration. If I'm going to Poshmark, I'm going there because I want to buy clothing.
Okay, so you see people having both. All right, that makes sense. Ian, any thoughts on that? And then nah, just kick off management and ownership.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and dive into management. So as Ryan mentioned, Manish Chandra is the CEO, was also a founder. I watched a couple of interviews he did, and I like the way he engages interviews. He seems to be long-term focused and really trying to create value. He said when he started the company, he wasn't really a fashionable guy, focused on that piece of it. He was more focused on the community aspect, and the social aspect was really what intrigued him. And so he said that's been a big part of kind of developing this company, is trying to find that right balance between community and commerce and not completely excluding one or the other, and having to find that right optimal point where they really benefit each other. He owns about 7% of the company, so a fairly healthy stake. There's also some venture capital ownership. A lot of the major owners right now are venture capital firms who backed them in the Series A, B, C, whatever. So there's probably going to be some sales once we hit the lockup period. I was finding a little bit of conflicting information about when that would be. One said like 93 days, another one said, which would be around now, and another said July. So sometime in the next few months, there's probably going to be some sales from especially those venture capital firms. And that's not a reason not to buy, but you should be aware that there's probably going to be some price volatility, especially it's a small company. It's a recent IPO, but they've also got a lockup period expiring sometime soon. So it just, there's likely to be some price volatility.
Yeah. And those usually are 6 months, but they can be different for each company. So probably this summer.
Yeah. I think the IPO was initially priced in like the $32 to $33 a share range, but it came out at $42 a share. And then,
They re-upped it before it started trading in the 40s, which is kind of where it's trading now. And then it went up almost 150% on the first day on the open trade.
It reached $104 a share, and it's down almost 70% since.
Yep, and that kicks it off right into the valuation. Since it's down now, the market cap is about $3 billion. Ticker is POSH, easy one.
Less today, I think it's like 2.8.
2.8 now, yeah. I was doing this research last night, so forgive me, pretend like we recorded this two days before. Either way, there'll be two more days until this comes out, so just look up your own information. I'm getting an enterprise value close to $2.5 billion. So they added a good amount of cash on their balance sheet before the IPO. And I'm adding on the $277 million that they raised. Ian might have some more on that on the balance sheet, but I'm thinking the enterprise value is a little bit lower than that market cap. So EV to sales would be at or under 10 on a trailing basis. EV to gross profit of about 12. Got me a bit excited, a little more reasonable than some of the companies we typically look at, but enterprise value to operating income is still over 100. They're still quite close to that break-even number. And then EV to operating cash flow was about 30 due to the working capital dynamics with accounts payable to customers. So they have a bit of a delay in the payments process, which allows them to, you know, expense some of that cash flow. This expense some of the things they are going to owe to customers, but they don't pay it out for another period, if that makes sense.
Right. And operating cash flow and free cash flow were very similar with the business. If I were if I'm looking at this, I would pay most attention to free cash flow and just make sure that those working capital impairments aren't temporary.
Yeah. And I don't know if impairment's the right word, just the adjustments it has versus the income versus the cash flow generated. And then the last thing I'll say with valuation is a lot of times with new IPOs, some of these aggregator sites can get share count or market cap off. So make sure you're getting it correct. And the share count is going to change a bit, right after the IPO. There can be some big adjustments there that you should be watching out for. But Ryan, you want to talk earnings?
Yeah, in 2020, they had GMV or gross merchandise volume of $1.4 billion, up 29% year over year. Their trailing 12-month active buyers reached 6.5 million, up 20% year over year, and had about $262 million in revenue, also growing around 28% year over year. They were net profitable on a GAAP basis, but just barely. That was a big improvement from last year. They had $84 million in operating cash flow and I think $82 million in free cash flow. So that puts them at a operating cash flow or free cash flow margin right around 30 to 32%. Stock-based compensation was only about 3% of revenue. Good to see that.
Pre-IPO, there will be probably a big hit post-IPO, but that is nice. Even before, when they were private, they weren't issuing it like crazy.
Right. I just feel like we see so many young companies just pour all their expenses or their salaries into stock.
Yeah, we'll typically see a 10% number for sure.
But this one seemed relatively low. Those were pretty much all the points for earnings. Ian, you want to hit balance sheet?
Yep. They have $262 million in cash on their most recent 10K. But as Brett was alluding to, they raised about $277 million in cash from the IPO. And so that number I would expect to be somewhere around $500 million. But you're going to want to take a look at that when the quarterly comes out.
Yep.
They've got on the balance sheet on the most recent one, it says they have $55 million in debt. Those are all convertibles, though, and they converted when the company IPO'd, they converted into shares basically at a 15% discount. They paid 85 cents on the dollar for shares from that convertible debt. Pretty straightforward balance sheet. As Ryan was mentioning, they have a significant liability of what they call funds payable to customers, which has a lagging effect. You know, it hits earnings, but then doesn't hit cash. And so you see that difference accounted for on the balance sheet and in the cash flow statement. And so their cash flow is positively impacted by that. And it seems like from looking at the last couple of years that is fairly steady and a fairly steady proportion of revenue. And so it's not like they... significantly, it didn't look to me like they significantly increased that to make cash flow look better right before the IPO. And then one final note, they don't hold inventory. And so there's no inventory on the balance sheet, which, keeps the company fairly capital light.
Yeah, it's a platform, They're not the one selling.
Yeah. And we joke about that type of stuff, but it's true. It's a big advantage for them. And the balance sheet is, super easy. Only 10 line items on there. So,
yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to get back and talk competitive advantages, future growth opportunities, and we got a new segment that Ryan will introduce. All right, welcome back. Next up, we're going to toss in a new category. This one's going to be a quick one, but Ryan's going to talk about it.
Yeah, so sometimes we have stuff that's sort of consumer-facing platform. So I thought it might be a good idea to get maybe customer experience or some sort of experience that we have with the products. Not all of us have to answer this one, but if we have any kind of anecdotes or experiences, it might be useful information. And I'll start. If you guys have anything, feel free to include it. But there was a postman or a mailman who had invested early in Amazon and Etsy, I think maybe in another one as well. But he just said he would deliver packages, and every time something got shipped, he would just kind of keep track in his head what he was seeing most of. And he said everyone should be looking out for Poshmark because
stock went down 60%, but it's okay. We'll cut him for
He said he was seeing a lot of packages. So I guess a little evidence there if you want to take that mailman's edge. It's being used a lot. They're shipping a lot of packages.
Yeah, I have no product experience. I know you guys just downloaded today, so you guys technically have just kind of investor product experience. But did you have any thoughts on the app without actually using it?
For me, it wasn't the type of thing that I'd want to use. I don't think generally I try and spend as little time as possible buying clothing. And so I don't really want to incorporate a social aspect into buying clothing. Much more, you know, I'd be much more interested in something like Stitch Fix that just sends me clothing and I don't have to spend any time working on it. So
it's like the opposite.
Right, exactly. But I thought it was kind of interesting. Like I could see that some people would definitely use it.
I did not actually make any purchases, but I did see stuff that I would have bought if I were looking for new clothing at the time. And it was cheaper than what you get in store, obviously.
Okay. That makes sense. All right, let's hit competitive advantages. Ian, we always start with you. What do you have?
Yep. I'll start with kind of what I was just mentioning there, actually, the social component. A lot of the companies we've been talking about recently talk about social commerce. That's like a buzzword now. I'm somewhat impressed with them that they've actually done it, right? They're like arguably the only company that's really doing social commerce completely. And I'm sure people will fact check me on that and come up with other things that I'm not thinking of at the moment, but it seems like everyone else is like trying to get into it and that's what they are. So I think that gives them a little bit of a competitive advantage and just a first mover's advantage to kind of understand the balance between social and commerce, because I think that's actually a pretty hard line to walk. And just the experience they've had so far, I think provides some tacit knowledge for them to kind of, you know, develop that, just that good model and knowing how to walk that line.
Yeah. It's interesting to see how they're going to be able to defend themselves. Cause there's a lot of people announcing, whether they're just kind of trying to get some buzz in the news, there's a lot of people announcing that they intend to do stuff similar to Poshmark. So it'll be interesting to see if they can defend their, or keep their users on the platform. But Ryan, what do you have?
I guess two. So they kind of have a niche. They're expanding out of this, but fashion resale is pretty niche. And I mean, if I'm just like clearing out my closet, it's either Poshmark or I'm throwing it away. It's not. And so that allows them to take a bit of a higher take rate because people want to be getting money for it anyways. That's sort of, there's people that have built brands on Poshmark as well, but for like the closet clearing people, they don't really care what the take rate is. And then scale to a point. So if you are a seller on Poshmark and you've built up this big follower base, you have guaranteed demand. And so you take a big risk leaving if you want to do something in-house, or, you know, if you have built this brand on Poshmark and you're like, all right, I'm going to build my own website, you might lose a whole bunch of demand that way. And so it kind of keeps the sellers on the platform.
Yeah, that moves right into mine. I'm going to sound like a broken record because I think I've chosen this a lot in the recent shows, but the flywheel dynamics with the online marketplace, I think, are pretty enticing here. I think they're legit. You know, a lot of times people talk about the flywheel and we're kind of like, maybe, but Poshmark, I think it's cool. The sellers come to Poshmark, like Ryan said, because there are 6.5 million buyers and growing, and the buyers will come because they have the most inventory to look at. This will hopefully feed on itself. And if they execute, you know, you could see themselves establishing a moat. You know, I don't know. It's pretty simple in that regard.
Yeah.
All right. Not highlights and lowlights. I'm way off base today. Future growth opportunities. What did you have, Ian?
My future growth opportunity is Posh Parties and then other features that they might develop like that. So a Posh Party is basically, first I'll note, it's actually, this is one of those companies that everything you look at is Posh something, right? It's always Posh Parties, Posh Pay, Posh Post. And so it gets a little confusing. I don't know if that's a competitive advantage or not. And I'll mention this too, just so that we're clear, set the record straight. Posh, the official dictionary definition, Posh. Elegant or stylishly luxurious. So all right, well, I think that perfectly, this is a pretty posh podcast, I would say.
Yeah, you could see why we didn't, we weren't aware of that term. But
but anyways, Posh Parties. Basically, it allows sellers to say, like, we're going to set up a party like selling jeans today or like skinny jeans. And then that seller can like place something on, like post it to this party, and then other people can also post things to the party. And so it becomes kind of a hub of this, like, of all these items that center around some sort of theme. And then people are like reposting the party. And so it's a little bit of, It's like the LinkedIn thing, right? If you give me like a like on my, you know, that I'm good at financial modeling, then I'll come back and say that you're good at financial modeling too, or something like that. You know, it's like if you post my party, then I'll post your party and we'll all, you know, kind of make money off of each other's audiences. And so I don't know exactly, like I wouldn't want to buy anything off of a Posh Party probably, but I think I like the direction they're going and trying to experiment with different types of social features. I don't know of any other thing that's really similar to a Posh Party. And so I think it's a unique idea. And I think if they continue to try and test out unique ideas like that, I think they're going to hit some good ones.
Yeah. The community aspect of it, could they give them some sort of positive? It's tough though, building those social, you know, things online, especially with the shopping. I don't know, because, you know, someone like us, we're not just going to be like, all right, let's join this thing. It's kind of, you got to be the right demographic.
Yeah, I think I kind of like the idea of, it's almost like virtual events, like almost virtual conferences. Like they have their Poshmark, like actual event. It's kind of like smaller scale ones. But I'll get to my future growth opportunity. It's not super exciting. And it's obviously kind of just the logical next step, but international expansion. So they just launched into Australia, which is the first new market outside of North America. Feels like a model that's probably applicable to most places. And Australia is, given that it's such a social experience, they want it to be English speaking countries for the time being, or that's where it's easiest to grow into. And so it seems like a good country or continent, I guess, to be entering.
Yeah, makes sense for sure. All right, mine were pets and toys. I wanted to talk about this one because it seems a bit strange. And it's kind of a weird, you know, they're diverging a bit from the fashion part, but the pets is just items for pets. So I guess fashion for pets, you know, there's some diehard, you know, people that have pets that like to dress them up, stuff like that. And then toys equals kids' toys, but secondhand. You know, you think if maybe they get the personalized fee correct, it could be good. And it might make sense building out that for the secondhand market, because it seems like there's an opportunity there. But does it make sense for them to do this? Does it dilute the fashion and apparel part of the platform if you have all these other items on there?
Yeah, for me, I think the first thing that comes to mind is Ryan's competitive advantage, that it's a niche for them, right? And that seems like the way that they could kind of insulate from things like, you know, social commerce on Instagram, right? Whereas that would just be kind of an uncurated mess to some extent, and not focused on clothing, that Poshmark could really gain market share and just the clothing and really capitalize on that. There should be plenty of room within clothing to, you know, there's plenty of market opportunity. And it would scare me if that feed started becoming less useful and a little bit harder to navigate the site, that it just seems like that's kind of, they might be losing some of their competitive advantage. And the last thing I'll say on that too, is if they feel the need to expand into that type of stuff, the clothing market seems plenty big enough to me. And I'd rather see them trying to gain a larger market share of that than trying to pivot to something else. And so it indicates to me that they might be that revenue growth might be slowing down in the clothing market. And so they're trying to pivot to something else to kind of sustain some short-term revenue growth. But I don't know. Yeah. That's the cynical side of me.
No, I agree. That's the same thoughts I had, that, you know, it seems a bit strange. Ryan, do you have any thoughts on that though?
Well, they launched the pets and toys category alongside the beauty and wellness category, and the beauty and wellness category makes sense to me, but the pets and toys, it feels, if they see that it's not working or that it's diluting the experience, I would like to see them shut it down fast. Companies that are able to figure out when something isn't working, that's usually a positive sign. This was maybe a dangerous move.
So the thing that would make it possibly work is if they can make the feeds personalized enough and they're actually good at that. So if someone is, say you have a kid and you want to see a pet and a kid and you want to see the toys and the pet stuff, maybe they know that and they can be good enough, like a Facebook or something like that, to personalize the feed enough. But if you have your core customer that's a diehard, you know, shopaholic, I guess, and wants to get a look at all these secondhand clothing, and you're diluting that, that would be the red flag. But it seems like they'd be able to personalize that as good, you know, well, right?
I'm just not sure that people want another general social media app, right? I think that's one of the things here is that it's actually like you can get, and I think people will see more and more of these, but these specialized social media apps where I am looking for a community of people who love secondhand clothing. Right. Yeah. And then this adds the commerce piece of it. And I don't know. I could be proven wrong. But
yeah, no, it seems like they're going after the short term revenue opportunity. It might hurt their long term opportunity. But yeah, I guess we'll hit highlights and lowlights to wrap things up. Ian, what do you have?
So highlights for me, unique idea. I think the social commerce thing is interesting in that they seem to be moving in the right direction and doing that. Steady revenue growth. A couple of the lowlights, when I was searching some stuff on Google, I typed in does Poshmark, and like a couple of the top results was does Poshmark or autofill results were like stuff like does Poshmark sell fakes? So I don't think, like, I think that's probably people trying to see if it's legitimate or not. And so it's not necessarily a low light because they probably go there.
What if they meant does Poshmark sell fake IDs?
That could be it. That could be it.
Maybe that's a new market they're expanding into. Yeah.
And the thing is, they can't control that. You're right. Because it's like,
right, they can't.
The consumers might be selling fakes, but I don't know. So what?
Right. And it's part of the thing. And this gets into my other low light, is they talk a lot about building brands. I'm not sure how much you really build a brand of selling used goods. Yeah. Now, one thing that might happen.
It's
go
not
ahead.
All used goods. I know people sometimes are like trading at like Etsy. Like they've bought maybe clothing, or they got clothing, or maybe they make clothing and they're using it to sell it on Poshmark. So I know some, but then some people are just clearing their closet. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. And I was just going to say when it's talking about, you know, when people are wondering if Poshmark sells fakes, if people can build brands on it and gain some credibility and you get some reviews and all that type of stuff, like I'm sure that satisfies the consumers to some extent, but I think that's definitely a big headwind here, is just gaining that consumer confidence. I assume they have to spend some decent money acquiring customers and convincing them that this is a legitimate site.
Yeah, it seems like, and again, we're just introduced to this company, so we don't want to tell them what to do. And this analogy gets used a lot, but it seems like they can learn a ton from Airbnb. That, as you know
just
what I mean?
Just in like
the philosophy of how you treat your sellers.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did see some lowlights in that regard where sellers weren't necessarily happy. I think you got to keep the sellers happy.
That's been the biggest success of Airbnb, is to a fault that they keep the host, which is the sellers, happy.
Yeah. I mean, sellers are the main part of the platform. If they can provide content, buyers will come.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, what about your highlights?
Highlights for me, I actually think, even though it's a 20% fee, I think the sellers appreciate transparent pricing. Even if it's higher than others, you know what you're getting. I think that actually, and eBay's made a point of this, it hurt eBay because no one really knew exactly what the fees they were getting. Also, I think resale is really overlooked. And Poshmark really provides a good end-to-end solution that Facebook and Pinterest can't or don't.
Yeah.
Lowlights for me, guidance wasn't great. Revenue guidance was fine. EBITDA guidance was pretty bad, at least for the first quarter, I thought. But they also talk a lot about the social component, and they have a lot of sort of ventures or bets into the social component. I don't think they need to focus as much on the social component as they do making sure the infrastructure and the logistics for sellers and buyers is really easy, making sure returns is easy, and making sure that they're able to diagnose when a return is. So one of the scenarios that I saw was a seller sent something to a buyer and the buyer said the zipper doesn't work and returned it. Well, the zipper worked fine according to the seller, but the buyer probably tried it on and just didn't want it. And in that specific case, Poshmark just didn't respond. And they just said, no, you have to keep it.
Yeah, that's the problem with these things.
That's where, you know, making sure focusing less on the social and focusing more on keeping your stakeholders happy is probably important there.
Yeah. And what do you guys think about the take rate? I feel like to me that 20% seems solid, you know, for the value they're providing.
Yeah, I think lowering it for the sellers that have sold number of times.
Or so, been there for 4 years or something.
Yeah. Let's say you have 100,000 followers and you've sold, 500 items or something like that, lowering the take rate as they hit certain sort of thresholds would probably be a good idea to keep them on the platform, because those are the ones that probably could build a Shopify or whatever and do it outside of Poshmark. And they've said that I think one of the things in their S1 or 10K said it could come down over time.
Okay. Ian, anything else, Ryan?
I would just add, like, if I were clearing out my closet, and it's the one place I would go. Like, if I wanted to, if I was like, oh, this is good, but I'm not going to wear it anymore, I guess I could sell it on Poshmark. Because if you're going to try to sell it on Facebook Marketplace or something like that, I don't know. There's like a distrust, I guess, like buying clothes. I think Poshmark's built a little bit of trust in reselling clothes. Craigslist, I don't think. I think it'd be tough.
I don't know. Hard to decide. What about you, Ian? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think 20% is... it's reasonable for the sellers, and I think it's a good indication of the value that the Poshmark is providing. And like Ryan, though, I think the stepping it down for people who are doing a lot of sales is the smart thing to do. Kind of builds that seller loyalty, and then also, you know, prevents them from jumping ship to, like you were mentioning, Shopify or Instagram or wherever. I think you want to make sure you're keeping your sellers happy. So,
okay, I'll hit my highlights. Yeah, I think the moat, they could develop a moat if they execute well. It's not there yet because they're still a young company. And, you know, the moat talk is always overrated, but we try to hit it every time. I do think in this case they could develop one over time. I love the unit economics and margins and balance sheet. Really everything checked out in the financials. And the nicest fact I saw was that users spend 27 minutes a day on average on the platform. I think that's a good indicator that people like spending time on that, unlike something maybe like Stitch Fix, and the value proposition might be a bit different, or other places where people are buying things where they're not just spending time on there to spend time on there. I think that could be a plus. Not sure if it's a deal breaker at all with them. Lowlights, a lot of competitors emerging or will likely emerge. It's a highly dynamic market, which is tough. It's hard to predict what's going to end up within the used fashion space. But besides that, I had trouble finding lowlights. A lot to like here. Anything else from you guys before we wrap up with the final question?
No.
Okay. More or less interested, Ian?
I'd say I'm less interested, which is largely to do just because I'm worried about competition, which I think oftentimes we put too much emphasis on competition, and it keeps us out of making potentially good investments because we're worried about these competitors. But this is a space where I just think there's going to be a lot of competition, and I'm not convinced that they have developed the volume that they need to really compete with that competition.
Okay, Ryan?
I think that is contributing a lot to the sell-off, I'd imagine.
Apparently,
overvaluation probably did.
Yeah. Apparently, Wall Street had pretty high guidance estimates for the first quarter, which, you know, that hit it too. But yeah, that's probably some of it too.
I'm definitely more interested. This feels a little bit like Pinterest, like a year ago. There were some doubts, and people kept saying, you know, competition, and then they just went ahead and kept producing great results. I think Poshmark can do that. I thought the financials were really good. I thought the price was fair.
Valuations, little
under 30 times free cash flow for a company that is growing at about 30% a year. That's pretty good.
And it might be a little bit inflated over the long term once their growth slows, but still pretty solid.
Yeah, I think if this is a very successful social commerce business, this could be much bigger than $2.5 billion or whatever it's at. Management was good. I liked Manish. It checked a lot of the boxes for me.
Yeah, that's one thing I'd have to check out is the management. Didn't really get much on that, but I'm more interested. Only concerns I have is the same ones as Ian, where it's just the dynamic industry. I think it reminds me a bit of Coursera. It's probably just because that's at the top of my mind, just because we recorded something on them. But when there's so many questions about how the end state of the market will be or what it'll be, it's just tough. And they have well-capitalized competitors. but also reasonable valuation and the great concept. I mean, that's going to keep me watching it for sure.
That take rate invites competitors too.
Yeah, it does. It does. Ian, anything else?
I was just going to say, do you guys think that there might be a little bit of a floor here somewhere that this company would be an acquisition target, particularly if the valuation got hit even further? It seems like that there might be some of these, with so many companies focused on social commerce, there may be, like, I don't think we're at that floor right now, but there may be a floor if they weren't to quite hit the estimates that they're wanting to.
Here's some fake M&A. We just get Revolve Group, Stitch Fix, and Poshmark to merge. All of them merge. You just make it, you know, Revolve keeps the brand, Poshmark keeps the social, Stitch Fix keeps the data. We all just go home happy. And all the competitors just merge.
My only thing is it's just very different. It's just a lot of it is still resale fashion. Like, it's eBay done right.
Yeah.
Maybe eBay's, and I don't know how big eBay is. Maybe they're an acquirer or something like that. But
yeah, eBay can acquire them.
Yeah, I think there is a floor in this business. It's cash flow generative, has a lot of cash on hand.
It feels like an acquisition that would fail, though. Poshmark shareholders would end up being fine because they get acquired. But it feels like one of those Microsoft or something like those acquisitions where they're like, meh.
Could also be like an Instagram.
It could. I guess there's a big range on acquisitions, so I don't know. But I think you're right, Ian. There is a floor. There is a floor. As long as they keep executing, the business doesn't go backwards.
Yeah.
All right. Stock for next week, Ryan.
Squarespace.
They're
the website hoster. I don't think they've gone public yet.
You didn't want to choose Oatly?
But
they have oat technology, guys.
It's they filed their S1. They are sort of a Wix competitor, and we're big fans of Wix here. We are shareholders, so we're going to take a look at them.
All right, that sounds like a fun one. That does sound like a fun one. All right, that's going to wrap things up. Thank you guys for listening. As always, remember, we are not financial advisors. Anything we say on the show is not formal advice or recommendation. Ryan and I are general partners at Arch Capital. Clients in Arch Capital may hold securities discussed in this podcast. Thank you all again. We'll see you next week.